Now, again, what can you do to undo these philosophies? And again, we have a variety of cognitive, emotive, and behavioral techniques against your low frustration tolerance. You can dispute, it's too hard, what makes it awful that it's hard, why should it be easier, until you always answer, it's just as hard as it is, it's not too hard, it is difficult, I'm not going to deny that, but I can take it. And again, you can referent the disadvantages of your own low frustration tolerance, because you're the one with the pain in the gut, and they may even be sort of delighted that you are in such pain. And you can use coping statements such, it's harder to keep the low frustration tolerance than to work my butt off to give it up. And I can bear these difficult customers and their obnoxious behavior, so I'll never like it. And these DCs should definitely act the way they are, because that is their nature, to act that way, and it's very unlikely that they're going to change. And to convince yourself over and over and over that the one thing you can do is to change you, but that only work works. No goddamn magic will make you change. Only your hard work. And again, you can use our psychoeducational techniques, our books, our cassettes, our workshops, talks, etc. Emotively, vigorously, powerfully, you can push your ass, P-Y-A, push your ass, which is our great slogan at RDK, strongly, to make strong self-statements. I damned well can stand what they're doing, though again, I'll never be enthusiastic about it. So these people are acting difficultly. Tough, too bad, not awful, and again, I can take it. And everything should be as bad as it is, because it is that way right now. And use rational emotive imagery to again imagine the most difficult conditions that you can't control at all, and these people are taking advantage of these difficult conditions, especially at work. They may be favored, or even in your own home. A sibling of yours may be favored over you at home, or you may be disfavored by some members of the family unjustly. So you think of that, you let yourself get very depressed, very horrified, very low, much low frustration tolerance, and then you work on, again, feeling only sad, sorry, disappointed, frustrated, but not horrified about it. And you work on accepting you with your LFT, your low frustration tolerance, because if you say, I shouldn't have LFT, then you're adding an additional problem, and you're never going to get rid of the original one, because you get hung up on the secondary disturbance so much. You can do role playing again and play out a role where you have to be with one of these very difficult people, especially a boss, an interviewer, or somebody, a teacher, a professor, and show yourself how you can handle it. You don't have to make yourself upset about it. And you can use humor emotively, that reality never asks my permission. It just doesn't. And other humorous ways of looking at things. Behaviorally, with your LFT, you can again stay with the difficult customer. Don't divorce them. They'll probably give you a pain in the ass after divorce anyway, or through divorce case, but don't divorce them until you get rid of your horror about them. So stay with them. Reinforce yourself for not getting upset about them, and penalize yourself. Burn a $100 bill every time you get upset, and then you'll upset yourself so much about that you'll forget about the difficult customer. Again, you can use time-out behavioral procedures, getting away from them for a while. And you can convince yourself that you practice, and now you better do plenty of unpractice in regard to upsetting yourself about them. And show yourself that you are now, presumably with the low frustration tolerance, getting away with murder by murdering yourself. That's what you're really doing. Now, finally, humans, including you, do throw in, not always, the self down. Whenever you're with a difficult person and one, you get horrified that you didn't change him or her and make him or her much less difficult, but then also you get horrified at your upsetness. I shouldn't be upset, I shouldn't be hostile, I shouldn't be disturbed about this. So you knock yourself off about that. So your reactions to the disturbed person are self-downing. I'm too inadequate to put up with this slob. I should be able to do that. I'm too weak to get along in life with these difficult people. If they don't love me and stop bothering me, that proves I'm no good. They would only do that and act obnoxiously because I'm such a weakling or a no goodness. Those are nutty statements. And then on a secondary level, after you upset yourself about them, you say, I'm no good for being angry. I'm no good for having LFT, low frustration tolerance, and whining about them. And you convince yourself that you don't have to feel badly about feeling badly. And if you do that one thing, then you're way ahead of the game and then can go back and do the other thing. But how do you, again, overcome your self-immolation, self-desecration, self-denigration? And the answer is, again, with a variety of cognitive and emotive techniques. You dispute the notion that I'm too inadequate and too weak to bear these kind of people, to put up with them. And you dispute, I must not be angry, and I must not have the LFT. And you write out coping statements again, yes, I'm not doing the greatest by myself or by them or anybody else by upsetting myself, but that's also my nature. I'm not a weakling, but often I act weakly, and I can bear with that and accept myself as a screwed up human. And especially, again, in referencing, you write down the harm of downing yourself. Now, people, I have clients after clients. I had one just earlier today who was downing herself enormously because she still had the nutty illusion that you get great gain by doing so. If I really put myself down, then I stop acting badly. Well, shit, lots of luck on that. If you put yourself down, if you are a rotten person, an RP for acting rottenly, how can a rotten person change and act better? That won't help you at all. Also, you distract yourself immensely into the self-downing, and then you get nowhere whatsoever. So you better convince yourself that to put yourself down, not your behavior again, but when you for doing the behavior gets you nowhere whatsoever, so you better down it often, what you do, but not you, the human, and get to our point in RET where you unconditionally, always, under all conditions, accept you just because you're alive and human, which is the only excuse you need for accepting you. Or a more elegant solution, if you really want to work on it, but it's harder to get, that you only rate what you do, good, bad, and indifferent, and you never rate your being, your essence, yourself. You don't need a self-rating. But again, if you insist that you do need it, then you get back to, I'm okay because I'm alive, and then you can add, and these other shits are non-shitty because they're alive. You see, you can extend it. If you can accept yourself, you have a much easier time accepting difficult people. Emotively, you can again use rational, emotive imagery to imagine the worst that you do, that you keep upsetting yourself about these DCs, even though you've heard my great talk on the subject, and you really feel depressed and horrified and panicked, and then you work on feeling sorry and regretful, which you can train yourself to do. And you give yourself forceful coping statements. Yes, damn it, I keep really angering myself and horrifying myself about these difficult customers. Isn't that bad? But I have a right to do that, and it's just crummy behavior, and I am not my behavior, even though I do my behavior. Go over those until you really believe them over and over. And of course, you can do our famous shame attacking exercises, which I invented in 1969, and innumerable people have done them. They've been copied all over the world, where you deliberately go out in public and do something asinine, foolish, ridiculous. Don't walk naked and get arrested or tell your boss that he or she is a shit and get in trouble. You do something asinine, foolish, and ridiculous and not feel ashamed. You really, and you do it several times. Our famous one is you go out on the street and you stop a stranger and you say, I just got out of the loony bin, what month is it? Or our equally famous or more famous one, you go in our lovely subways, and New York is civilized enough to have subways, some of the other cities are uncivilized, they don't. You go in our subways and you yell out the stops at the top of your lungs. 42nd Street! And you stay on the train. But our best one over the years has now been added to. For years, we had people go to drugstores at a crowded hour and say in a loud voice so everybody in the store could hear, I'd like a gross of condoms. And since I use so many of them, I should get a special discount. But now, one of our therapists, we give them to our therapists to do to show them that they don't die of shame. If they do, we give them a lovely funeral with flowers, etc. So we give them to our therapists, and they, one of them in Seattle now goes out in public, drugstores at a crowded hour, and says to the druggist and anybody who will hear, I'd like a gross of small condoms. And he's not feeling ashamed. So if you really want to work on your shame, you really go over those things over and over again and do shameful things, but don't get in trouble and don't harm anybody, don't hit anybody, but you would consider that shameful, or steal, or something like that from them. But emotively, evocatively, convince yourself that no matter what you do, it is stupid, foolish, bad, ridiculous, asinine, self-defeating, but you are never a rotten, stupid person. Then behaviorally, and the shame attacking exercise is behavioral as well, you stay again with the difficult customers, whomever the hell they are, and you could even divorce them, you could quit your job, but you deliberately don't do that, till you get over your horror, and especially your anger and LFT about them, then you decide whether it's worth leaving. But don't run away, because you'll bring you with you, and there'll always be more DCs to bother you or to encourage you to bother yourself about them. And again, you can use reinforcements and penalties. But now, let's suppose you do all this, and I've certainly given you enough to do for the next day or two to live with difficult customers. What do you do about changing the bastards and the bitches? And I'm deliberately over generalizing that they're just fallible, fucked up humans who act bastardly and bitchily some of the time. But that's not the way you see it. Now, what are you going to do to change them or help them? If you really can't change anybody, except maybe with a gun to their head, but then that's temporary. And the answer is, again, you understand them, and you understand especially that most of them are telling themselves nonsense and getting themselves upset. So you try to figure out for yourself their irrational beliefs. When they're behaving badly, nastily, or meanly, or they could be lying to you or carping at you. Something you see is eating them. They're eating them, actually. So you look for their nutty ideas by getting A, the activating event that they're in, some relationship with you, and C, their consequence, their horror, their acting behaviorally very badly to you and usually to others as well. And then you say, what is B? Their bullshit, their belief system. And the answer normally is, cherche le should, cherche le must. They're telling themselves some must, almost always, not always, but almost always. That they have to do well, or they're no good, that you must treat them differently, or they know who you are, and that the world must be easy when it isn't. So you try to understand that, which helps you forgive them, but then you try to show them, if you have some relationship with them, what they're doing to upset themselves. You try to help them figure out coping statements, and you can even get some of our REP self-help report forms that we have back at the desk, and you figure out the ABCDEs, and you get to E with them, and you try to get them to change and write down coping statements that no matter how much you and others bother them, they do not need to get back at you. And the coping section says, I don't like very much to be bothered, because they normally think you are bothering them, whether you are or not, but I can take it, and I don't have to do anything nasty about it. From their frame of reference, you try to show them that it's really screwing them, and if you do it again assertively rather than angrily, you have a chance. You show them how to distract themselves by doing other things rather than giving in to their nastiness or their bad behavior toward you. You encourage them to read adequate books like my anger book or other books which they could help themselves by, use our cassettes, come to our workshops. You help them with problem solving because frequently they get so frustrated by not being able to solve the problems of life that therefore they give you and themselves a royal pain. Philosophically, you try to show them philosophies such as there's no gain without pain, which I thought for a while I originated, maybe I did, but I didn't realize it before that. I thought AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, originated, and then I found out the real author, apparently the original author, was Benjamin Franklin, Poor Richard's Almanac, number, volume 2. There's no gains without pain, so you try to get to see that. And it's hard for them to stop and change, but it's harder for them not to. You try to go over with them some good philosophies. You encourage them to get a vital, absorbing interest in life, which I and Robert Harper outline in a new guide to rational living. They really get involved in something big, constructive, a cause, a big ongoing project, and then they don't have the time to be that much of a pain in the ass. You help them find the reasons, if there are any, for A, their displeasure, because they're almost always displeased, and B, their horror, which leads to the obnoxiousness. You give them some positive suggestions that they could do better if they acted differently, and better for them, not just for you or the world. You model good behavior, your own behavior, especially unconditional acceptance of them when they're acting badly, and you teach them how to model other people's behavior, because some of them have been modeling for years, their mothers or their fathers or their brothers or their sisters or their uncles or aunts, poor behavior, and they think it's okay, but you show them there are other people around who get much better results with other behavior that they can use. Now, emotively, some emotive techniques to help change them, and again, you can't force them to change, are to no musts on them yourself. That's unconditional acceptance. You unconditionally accept them and you show them, not just tell them, I unconditionally accept you. They may not believe that, but you show them that no matter what they do, you don't like it, you prefer not to have it, but you don't damn them with your manner, your appearance, your scowls, your grimaces. I was saying you show them that you fully accept them, but not what they do. Once you really show people that you can not damn them, not put them down, then maybe they're willing to listen to some of their annoying behavior. You can actually give them love and warmth if you feel they're lovable, which many of them are to some degree, and the more loving and warm you are toward them, probably they'll be less obnoxious to you. That doesn't mean they'll be less obnoxious to other people, but love begets love as well as hate begetting hatred, and that often can go a long way. But look for something about them that you truly do love. You can use humorous things to show them humorously how they too, like you, foolishly obsess themselves with things and people that they hate. Use some of our rational, humorous songs with them, get them to sing them. Get them, if you can induce them, to do rational emotive imagery where you or somebody else acts very badly toward them and they get obnoxious and hostile and murderous, and then show them that it's quite possible for them to feel just disappointed, just sorry, just frustrated, just annoyed at what people are doing, but not damning them. Figure out with them forceful coping statements. I don't have to act this way that bothers others, even though I easily am prone to do so. And I am not a worm, but my behavior is wormy, and therefore it would be highly preferable, not necessary, that I change it. You can do reverse role playing by upholding some of their nutty ideas and getting them to try to talk you out of them and finally showing them how they could. You can use stories and fables with them that show them that they could act differently. Try to get them to be interested in more pleasurable things, more pleasures, which will at the very least distract them from what they're doing. And sometimes they require skill training because they have very poor skills, especially assertion skills, social skills, and interpersonal skills. And if you can help them or they can be helped by courses, workshops, efforts to gain more skills, then they would be much less obnoxious. Some people are so unskilled at a dance, for example, not just in dancing, but in approaching partners and talking to them, that they act very badly at the dance. So if they get more skills in social relations and other aspects of life, they act much less badly. And behaviorally, then you can do contracting with them. We often use this in our marriage and family therapy in REP, where we get a husband who objects strongly to his wife, let us say, beating the kids or not doing things around the house, and the wife objects to his being unkind to her, neglecting her, etc. So we get them to contract so that he will be kinder and spend more time with her, and she will make an effort to clean the house more and something like that. They contract with each other. So you can contract with some of these obnoxious people if you're not making yourself and raising hostile, that if you do what they want and you ask them, you don't tell them what they want, they can do therefore what you want or not do what you don't want, and you make actual contracts and then you check them and write them down and see if you both do them, and you can both get reinforcements for fulfilling the contract and penalties for not fulfilling it. You can try all kinds of compromises with them if, again, you're not mean back to them. You can plan pleasures with them. Actually plan the pleasures and go through the pleasures, because the more pleasures you do together, the less likely they are to be obnoxious. The time out procedure goes for both of you, that you both take time out when you're about to fight with each other about their so-called annoyingness. You can do assertion, as I said before, rather than hostility. But one of the best techniques with difficult people is what I teach a good many of my clients who live with a difficult person or work with a difficult person or have a mother-in-law or a father-in-law who's a royal pain in the ass and who goes on is called fogging. Fogging means that when people argue with you and won't listen and tell you you're wrong about this and they're dogmatic and they're rigid and hold their ground, and you get nowhere, and you can go on and on and on like this forever and ever and ever, then you deliberately seem to agree with them. You pretend that you agree, and then they run down. You see, if they're saying, look, you're no damn good, you're always interrupting me, and I can't stand it, and how can you do a thing like that? And you say, oh no, I'm not doing that, you just see it that way, you get nowhere. But you say, you know, maybe you're right about that. Maybe I am interrupting you. I didn't realize that. Thank you for telling me. I'm going to work on that. Now you think to yourself, fuck it, they're wrong. But you don't say it to them. You see? And almost always I've had people live with psychotic relatives of theirs, mothers, fathers, grandmothers, who just go on and on and criticize all over the place. So if you fog these people, and you still have to be with them. I'm not telling you to stay with them for the next 50 years, but let's suppose it's even a relative of yours that you take care of, you can't get away. Then you seem to agree, and they say black is white, and you say, oh, black is white. That's a very fascinating notion. I never thought it that way before. Now, really going to give it some thought hereafter and see whether black isn't sometimes white. Now, again, you think to yourself, fuck it, it's black. So often fogging will work beautifully. Not always, but very often. And you can change your own actions, whatever they are, but especially again the hostility, but other actions that they, and you can even ask them what they dislike about what you do, and they'll always find something, and you really make an effort to agree with them about that and to change it, and then they're more likely to change theirs. You can do all kinds of experimenting with them and try to get them to experiment. When they say, oh no, if I were nice to people or I didn't scream and yell at them, I'd get nowhere. They could be right about that sometimes. You say, well, why don't you experiment for the next few weeks when somebody acts badly to you, including me, just try to not scream and yell and try to be nice and see what happens. So you can often get difficult customers to experiment. And then you can do what is called active listening, or that my friend Ted Crawford and I have been working on, particularly on revolving discussion sequence. What you do in revolving discussion sequence with anybody, especially people you live with or related to, and sometimes with people you work with closely, rather than fight with them, you try to get the attitude that I want to understand their position, and I like my position, but it's not sacrosanct. And I want two positions. One, to see things from their frame of reference, and then two, to try to, when we get to disagreements, to get them to agree with me. So you don't give up your point of view, but you try to not antagonize them. Now, one way you do that is by when they state something that you're likely to disagree with, they say, I like this political action rather than that. You don't jump in right away and say, oh no, that's no good, give them even good sane reasons. You just repeat it first. If I understand you correctly, you like this position rather than that. And then often they change right away. Oh no, no, I said something a little different. I like this position somewhat rather than that one. And then you repeat that, and you finally both agree on what they said. You really repeat what they said and get them to agree. Then maybe you disagree with them. But by that time, you've got rid of most of these disagreements, actually, because people don't really hear each other. In an active listening, you listen very closely. You try to get into their head, their heart, their feelings, and listen. And then you finally can disagree with them. Now, if they're really difficult, as I said before, you never even have to get around to the disagreeing part. There are many times that you wouldn't get around to that at all. Okay, thank you.